Schools closed. Theaters closed. All places of amusement and indoor meetings no longer. And everywhere you look, mask-wearing people. Sound familiar? Well, the year was 1918, and the world was battling one of the deadliest epidemics in human history. On Washtenaw Remembered Today, here on the Lucy Ann Land Show, along with Dean Erskine, we examine the Spanish flu of 1918 and its impact on Ann Arbor. You're listening to Ann Arbor's talk station, 1290 WLBY. Our source is Patty Smith. She is a wonderful historian in our community, and you can follow her on Facebook and also Patty, teacherpatty.com. Patty's with an I, teacherpatty.com. Patty is the author of Downtown Ann Arbor, Vanishing Ann Arbor. She did a history of the People's Food Co-op in Ann Arbor and has written for many publications, including craftbeer.com, Concentrate, the Ann Arbor District Library's Pulp Blog, you name it. She knows our history. Patty, welcome.
Thank you so much. This is so exciting to be talking to you both.
Well, you know, when I reached out to you, I hadn't realized you had already been collecting information from the time period of 1918 to post on teacherpatty.com.
Yeah, I started last week, and I there's a limited amount of information online. So when this is all over and things are back to normal, I'm definitely going to take a visit out to our libraries and do some digging in the actual paper newspapers. But for now, as always, the Ann Arbor District Library Old News, they're the heroes. They're the ones who scanned and digitized those old newspapers. So thanks, as always, to them for doing that so that people like me can access the information.
What was Ann Arbor like in 1918?
We had about 18,000 people, and we had in May of 1918, the War Department formed something similar to the ROTC. And this is key. This is something that was happening at the University of Michigan and elsewhere. And this was, it was called the Student Army Training Corps, the SATC. So again, similar to ROTC, but it was for college men. It was men at the time, college men to stay in college and receive military training. So that was a big thing that was happening, not only on our campus, but on campuses all over. And that, you're going to hear me say SATC a number of times, because that is a key thing that was happening and is involved in the influenza spread.
And what does that stand for again?
Sure, Student Army Training Corps.
Okay, so that had been formed in that time period.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how did that help when the flu hit?
Well, what happened, the first mention I found about the influenza, now there probably is earlier information, it's just what's available right now online. The first newspaper article I saw was from October 5th, 1918, and said that, quote, a number of Spanish flu cases, unquote, were found amongst the men in the SATC. And the person in charge could not give the exact number, but, quote, it is not large. And that was kind of the first mention I saw from a primary source of flu in Ann Arbor. A secondary source that I read said that October 6th, there was the first death in Ann Arbor, and that was a young man in the SATC who died.
So is it thought that because of that organization, an organized group, that it was being spread through that?
That's something I need to research more once I can get into a physical library and start pulling papers. But that, when we have deaths, there are a number of deaths from that group. And there are people kind of coming and going from other groups, from other universities. So remember, at the time, people weren't traveling as much as we do now, right? I mean, there were still horses and buggies. There were still, so people were not traveling as much like now, where you can just get on an airplane or whatever you need to do. So this was a group that did have a lot of ins and outs. And this is on my list of things to research more once we can get back into libraries.
So do we know how many people were impacted by this flu locally in Ann Arbor? I mean, how did this really decimate the community at the time?
Well, interestingly, what I saw, I want to find a primary source. We're just, you know, I'm a teacher, and we just did lessons on primary and secondary sources at the high school, so that's why I keep saying that. But so the primary sources, the census, I kind of rounded up to be about 18,000 people. A secondary source, there was an article written, I think from Michigan Medicine, and it talked about there was about 100 deaths in Ann Arbor total from the flu. I need to confirm that with the primary source, but for now, that's the information I have. And I masked it, and it's about 0.56%. So the kind of the overall, it was about a 2.5% mortality rate. And ours, from what I can tell now, looks like it was about 0.56%. And I don't know why. That's something I want to figure out. I mean, I can say that as early as October 17th, so this is about 12 days after this first mention, that's when things started closing. So, like, the theater, Majestic Theater, was a big theater on Maynard, where the parking structure is now.
Right.
They closed. The schools closed. Our local Board of Ed closed all the schools. And on October 17th, our city health officer requested that people wear face masks. And basically what he said is, I'm not going to order it unless you don't follow my request. So I'm going to let you have, you know, choice now, but if you don't do it, we're going to order it. So we started mid-October. I thought this was interesting that telephone services started being disrupted in mid-October because the telephone exchange workers came down with influenza, and like 27 of them had to not be there. So telephone services, because of course back then it was completely different. You had to call the exchange and the operators were falling ill. And so that was disrupted. And then after that, the telephone company ordered masks while working. So that all started mid-October.
Patty, this is amazing. Patty Smith with us, local historian here in Ann Arbor, author, teacher. Fascinating look of what happened in 1918. And I'll tell you, it's eerie when you think about it.
It is. What I found is people often ask me, you know, why is history important? And I have answers. I think they're decent answers. But really, now my answer is that now we kind of know how to act. Like, I have no idea how to act right now because I'm trying not to freak out. You know, I'm off work till at least April 6th, and I don't know how to act. So I'm looking at the past to figure out how to act.
You know, and that's such a great that is just a wonderful perspective, because I don't care who you are. I think all of us have felt at a loss for what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
No matter what you think the reasons are for this, or if you think it's going to be as bad as it looks or not, there become those moments where you just feel like a little bit overwhelmed or a lot overwhelmed. And you're right. Yeah. If you see what happened in history and know how things ended for that time period, it gives you much better perspective. Dean?
Well, there was probably, plus a lot of the panic and just anxiety about the war going on over in Europe at the same time. Patty, some of the things that I remember from some of the documentaries I've seen on the 1918 flu pandemic is that President Woodrow Wilson did not really address it too much, and not too much came out of Washington, D.C. the way it is now. Was that a difference of the federal government not maybe doing as much on a nationwide basis in some of these kinds of situations where it was more on the local and state government? Or was that just a decision by Wilson that he didn't want to talk about it because he was dealing with the war, plus the suffrage movement was going on at that same time as well?
That's a great question. One thing I would think that would just pop to my head is possibly communications could have been an issue. The fact that communication was so entirely different. And also, I don't know this for a fact. I'm thinking possibly there were more state decisions being, it was more of a state issue, because usually the health and welfare kind of that whole realm kind of falls to the state to determine. Like the state board of health in Lansing at the time was making a lot of the decisions. And if I'm remembering my government right, that is something that falls kind of in the purview of the states, is like the local health welfare type thing. So one thing I wanted to give a shout out to our friends in Lansing from back in the day. We had Governor Sleeper. Like, I've never heard of him, but that was the man's name, unless it was a typo in the paper. But I'm like, that's a wonderful name. So our governor time was being active. So regardless of anything, it sounds like was not coming from Washington, our governor in Michigan was gathering people together. They were having conferences in Lansing, and they had mayors, they had businessmen, they had health officers, they had doctors. This, I think, is interesting, and I need to research this more when this is all done. There were three, the state of Michigan wanted to shut it all down on October 12th. They wanted to shut everything. Three doctors from Detroit fought so hard against the shutdown that they didn't.
Wow. And I had never heard of Albert Sleeper before. I just had to look him up when you said that.
Yeah, isn't that a great name?
Yeah, well, indeed, he was governor of Michigan from 1917 to 1921. So he was only in his second year in 1918. He was the 29th governor of Michigan. He was a Republican. And he was from Bradford, Vermont, originally. And he died in Lexington, Michigan. So Governor Sleeper. Never heard of
him. Isn't that a great name?
But, you know, it makes sense what you said, because at that time with slower communications, it would be mm-hmm. the local jurisdictions that are handling this, you know, on a day-to-day basis. You can't wait days or weeks to get information from right. people in Washington.
Right, right. So, yeah, so we were pretty proactive. Like I said, those three doctors, they reconvened the next week, and the three doctors still from Detroit still fought against the shutdown. But they eventually went along with it. I'd love to know what happened during that meeting. But they ended up, the state pretty much shut everything down on October 19th, saying that all churches, movie shows, dance halls, lodge rooms, billiard pool rooms, everything shut down. But school was left to the discretion of local health officers. So October 19th is when the state shut it down.
Patty, go ahead.
So I was going to say, one thing I feel like this is just so ripe for research. Detroit, the city of Detroit was going to challenge that shutdown. They were going to go to court and challenge that to get it stopped, to get a stay, to get a stop. And then the state was like, okay, if you want to do that, the State Board of Health has the right to throw a general quarantine all around your city and prevent anybody from coming or going.
Wow.
So I really want, I know. So what was going on in Detroit? I'm going to look it up. But anyway, I'm sorry, Dean. Go ahead.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah, just the one question I was going to ask in the research that you did. They talk about the regular flu that we have right. every year, and it kind of dies out when you start getting towards the warm weather in spring. Mm-hmm. The hope is there that this will happen with the coronavirus too, yeah. although who knows.
Right.
This was different in 1918 because it died out in November, I believe it was, or into December. In your research, was there much speculation and much talk about how it was fading out and the reasons why?
No, and that is something I'm going to have to pull the papers because the November papers haven't really been scanned from that year. So at the time, in the 1890s, Ann Arbor had many papers. It was a whole chapter in the Vanishing Ann Arbor book. By 1918, we had whittled down. Things were closing, consolidating. So the Ann Arbor Daily Times is what's been scanned and what I've been reading. What I saw was up till about the end of October, when there was an opera singer concert that was canceled, and our town common council was really upset. So they literally, a guy from the common council literally went up to Lansing and is like, hey, how much longer is this going to last? And the health officer from Lansing is like, we're shut down until at least November 2nd, probably later. So there wasn't really, from what I've read, there really wasn't a talk about when is it going to end. Like there wasn't an idea of, okay, this is going to be done by thus and such a date. Now, what I did find in the secondary source I read is that it seemed to be from October 16th till about November 7th that we were the hardest hit. So that's something I need to pull those November newspapers and see what was up.
Do we know how long people lived with the Spanish flu in the Ann Arbor region at that time? Are we talking weeks or days or months?
I would say weeks, except, and this is something that I found interesting. It looks like stuff kind of died down in November, in the sense, I shouldn't use that phrase, that stuff sort of started getting back to normal in about November. But I found this random article from the Ann Arbor Daily News, Daily Times, that December 19th, there was a quarantine order. So as late as December 19th, they said they were putting quarantine signs around the city of Ann Arbor where there were cases of influenza. And that is later. So I don't know, is that a miss? Is that like a typo? I don't know. That makes more sense for October 19th, mm-hmm. but the date on the scan is December. So I that's something I have to figure out because, yeah, my understanding was stuff started, life started getting back to normal in November. So I'm not sure if there were just some lingering cases in December and they said, we're going to quarantine. I don't know. But, yeah.
What else did you come across in your research for our Washtenaw Remembered segment today on the Spanish flu and how it hit Ann Arbor? Any other little tidbits to pass along?
Yes, the U of M football team only played 5 games because of the flu and the wartime travel restrictions. But they were undefeated, and they were declared the 1918 national champions.
Oh, you're kidding. I didn't know that.
Isn't that great?
Woo, go blue.
So that'll be our happy note that, maybe the Lions, if we're not, God forbid, things are still, maybe the Lions will be declared the, Super Bowl champions somehow. If God forbid, we're still on shutdown.
We're talking with Patty Smith. She's our local historian in Ann Arbor. Her book, Vanishing Ann Arbor, co-written with Britton Woodman, among many other books that she has done. She's a teacher. Where are you teaching these days?
I'm at Ypsilanti Community High School, and it's been really a hard shutdown. I think we miss each other. I definitely, it's only been, 3 days, not even as long as a summer break, but I do really miss the kids.
Yeah. So. And you do a lot of talks around town. You're a frequent public speaker. You curated a Her Say, an all-woman variety show, Grown Folks Reading, Storytime for Grown-Ups. You're a storyteller with the Ann Arbor Storytellers Guild. Just remarkable how you engage people. Are you doing any kind of tours or anything coming up that that people can engage in? I know we can't do anything yet, but did you have anything scheduled?
I have things scheduled. Hopefully things are back to normal. But at the end of April, on April 28th, my friend Keegan Rogers, Keegan's a baker. He owns the Lake House Bakery in Chelsea. He and I have been doing desserts by the decade at the library. And we take a decade and we look at food, what was happening in food during the 20s, 30s, 40s. And then Keegan makes a period appropriate dessert. So we have that the 80s are scheduled for the end of April. Hopefully the library is back up and running. Mm-hmm. And then April 29th, this is something new I'm doing this year, and it might get pushed back. But April 29th, I'm putting together a night of lawyers storytelling. I used to practice law, and it's called May It Please the Court, and it's a fundraiser for the ACLU Lawyers Committee, and that's going to be April 29th at the Black Pearl. But if it gets pushed back, we will find another day, time, and place, because there are amazing lawyer storytellers. They just have amazing stories to tell, and I have my bar exam story that I love to tell. So hopefully things are back to normal, and I'm up there on stage yapping again.
I've heard a lot of those lawyer stories in court, actually. So
I bet, yes.
And I did forget to mention that you are trained as an attorney. You're just incredible. You're a Jane of all trades, that is for sure, Patty.
Very lucky, very blessed, and very lucky. So thank you.
Well, I hope people go to teacherpatty.com, P-A-T-T-I, teacherpatty.com, wealth of information on there. And listen, when you're giving some of these great talks, let us know, and we'll get you on the show to promote them, okay?
For sure. Right. Love it. Thank you both so much, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Remembered with Patty Smith today on the Lucy Ann Lance Show and Dean Erskine, Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.